The following program contains views and opinions that do not necessarily reflect those of KMRE staff or of the Spark Museum of Electrical Invention.
It's Cascadia News Now. I'm Dave Willingham with Cascadia Weekly's Tim Johnson. And tonight, special guest Joe Tian. Thank you for being here, Joe.
You bet. Thanks for inviting me.
And I'm very happy to be here with you both here on the very first day of the 2018 campaign. We've still got a little bit to talk about. Just in general, I know, Tim, you were pretty gloomy heading into Election Day yesterday. How are you feeling now?
Well, I'm feeling a lot happier. And I guess, you know, first of all, I'd just like to say you guys had a live election show. What an amazing thing. And you were the only, KMRE was the only station to actually do live. I really wanted to come down here, but I was sort of wrapped up in things, but it's such a fantastic thing that you all were doing to cover it live. I was covering it across town. I really wanted to run down here and be part of that show. But yeah, I'm feeling a lot better. I was very concerned that there'd be a low turnout election. I don't think that's a good democracy. I think when few people make a determination on outcomes, it's not good democracy. And then the other thing that I was very concerned with was that the county council itself, and we'll talk about this more, but the county council itself might actually lose control of their own membership and not be able to appoint the people that they wanted to. That was a real risk in this election. And again, I don't think that's good democracy. I think that our elected representatives should be in control of their own panels and their own councils and boards.
Absolutely. And Joe, how about you? How are you feeling after the event?
I'm feeling pretty good. I was surprised by the turnout, for one, and also the enthusiasm. I think that that voters, especially progressive voters, are showing, and just not just here locally, but across the country. I mean, that was a real shot in the arm, and I think a shot across the bow, I think, of the Trumpsters, and whether they be local or national. I mean, we had great outcomes statewide, and it's pretty exciting, I think, moving forward. And our local issues, you know, the jail's not over.
Well, let's get into that. We just got, just before air, we got the auditor's day after updates with the no vote on the jail is pulling away just a little bit. It's at 58.5 against. Are you guys surprised by that?
I'm not particularly surprised by it. And the reason I'm not surprised is that you always have, there's always a group of people on the right side of the spectrum that are against taxes, period, no matter what they're about. They just oppose them. So you've got that pull going that direction. And then on the left, you had, in this particular thing, people don't want to see their taxes applied to things that they fundamentally disagree with. And so you had a lot of pull to the outside and not a lot of strength in the center. And I think if you dig down into those poll statistics or those outcome statistics, you'll find that it passed in Linden, and I think it failed everywhere else, and it really failed hard in Bellingham.
Yeah, I would agree, Tim, that there is that core of anti-tax voters that no matter what the issue. I mean, we saw that with the statewide ballot issues, you know, pertaining to the tax increases, these advisory votes, and people just vote against being taxed, and except in rare circumstances, unless they live in Seattle. Seems like they vote for every tax increase. That is lining up. But yeah, with the jail, I was surprised by the margin and that it is continuing to grow, because if I recall correctly, last time this issue came up, that it just barely failed.
Yeah, it was about 51%.
Yeah, and now it's much stronger. So. And this is with some of our progressive leadership here with Kelly Linville, Carl Weimer, and others, you know, coming out in support of it. And so that surprises me that that the margin has been is as wide as it is.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is interesting because there was more official support for this measure than the previous measure. But I thought going into this that the jail measure had two major strikes against it. The first one was it wasn't dramatically different from what voters had failed to pass before.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, people get their back up about that. It's like, I said no, and I meant no. There's that. And then the other thing was, I think that in that time frame, in those 2 years, Skagit County built their own facility at about half the projected cost of Whatcom County for about the same number of inmates. And I think that that is, that's got to be a deal killer in a lot of people's mind. Why are we paying twice as much to house essentially about the same number of inmates? That it just, I think in voters' minds, there was just something not right there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I questioned the, you know, with the Skagit County Jail, you know, like you say, half the cost and almost the same number of beds.
Right, and it's nice. I've been down there. It's a nice facility. Yes, it is.
And we hear that, well, this will have more services, mental health services, that sort of thing. But I think that stuff gets lost in people's minds, and it's kind of more abstract. And they say, beds here, beds there. Why don't they cost the same? And yeah, I think it's obviously, like you say, people said, we said no before, and we mean it. We meant it then, we mean it now.
So I lived in Seattle in a period where there were repeated votes on expanding the monorail line. And this happened over and over and over again. The same issue was put to the voters. And we said yes, we said yes, we said yes. And then I think about the sixth time, people said no because they were tired of it. Are we just going to see the same thing crop up again in a couple of years?
Well, you got to think. I actually had a chance to interview the sheriff this morning, and he was vague about how that camp intends to move forward. But he said he, you know, was looking at we're going to have to invest in the facility we have now, and you know, fix doors, fix locks, that sort of thing. And I understand that. I've been here in Bellingham for over 14 years. I've been talking to the sheriff ever since. He's told me the first time I talked to him that. Back then that the jail was a mess, and I believe it is, but still the right fix has to be found, and one that's compatible with the community, with the mood of the community, with the sense of you know, where we are as far as crime rates and that sort of thing. And I get the impression that people just don't feel that we're there with this plan. As you said, Tim, it's not much different from the previous plan, and I think people wanted to see something a little more bold and something that is going to be a little more maybe innovative for the community.
Right, and I talked to council members as well, and before this was placed on the ballot, and there was a promise made to county council members that these issues of location, size, layout would be brought to them before it went on a ballot. Those promises were not put forward. They were instead just asked, it's got to go up in 2017, you got to put it on a ballot, and it's got to go now. And some were in favor of doing that, some weren't in favor of doing that. I think it came down to Carl Weimer, you know, who's a short timer now on county council, and his decision, I think, was an intellectually honest one, which is give it to the people, let the people decide. But talking to council people throughout the last several months, I think there was a real sense that there was not a lot of confidence that this was going to pass, mm-hmm. even among them, mm-hmm. even among them, and even among their they would like, I think, a new jail very, very badly, and there still was a sense that it's not gonna fly this time.
Yeah.
Well, that's a very good point. You know, I think the case has been very strongly made. I think most of Whatcom County would agree we need a new jail. Something fundamentally has to change there. So, where are we going to go from here? What are we going to see?
Well, I would speculate that they're in a big bind, and. One of the things that I think the county did not want to do is they did not want to throw good money after bad, and you've got a failing facility, and they really did not want to invest money into upgrade on that facility if they were going to get a new facility. But I think that they're in a very bad situation where they're going to have to do something. We talked about this on the show last week. It's interesting. The per diem rate on beds in Yakima is actually cheaper than the per diem bed rate in Whatcom County. And it's a terrible outcome for inmates and their families to move them to Yakima. But I think there's an opportunity to actually clear out the jail, move the inmates to Yakima on a temporary basis, and do some repairs that are needed on that facility, because I think it's going to be a while before we get a new jail.
Yeah, that was my question, is what do you do with the inmates while you make those kinds of those kind of retrograde repairs? Because I understand it's not just the doors and the locks and that sort of thing, but I mean it needs to be seismically upgraded and I don't know, could they build up? you know, so guys can't shoot arrows with bags of marijuana onto the roof.
Now, that's a treasured part of Bellingham. Yeah. It would really be a shame if we lost that aspect of our community.
That humanitarian aspect.
Yeah, that's right, I'm giving.
When it's, I've been fairly suspicious of the, you know, let's build a new jail right across the street. And, well, we've got this old jail because I'm from Snohomish County where we did that. And then we had two jails and we kept both jails and that was not great.
Defeated the purpose. Yeah,
it did. Although, you know, it's interesting. I have always returned to Skagit County because I think that there's a story there. There's a narrative there that I think we could learn from, which was Skagit County really did a bottom-up assessment of their jail needs. They went town to town. They got buy-in from the community, each community. They came up. They built this jail. And now there's a really interesting opportunity with the old jail in Skagit County to convert that into possibly a homeless center. And there's a discussion in Skagit County about that. So the interesting thing for Whatcom County is we talk about homelessness on the show a lot. We talk about the jail a lot. It would be interesting for and I'm not saying that those communities need to be together. And in fact, they should not be together. But that the sorts of space solutions for the one may actually lead to some kind of awareness or solution for the other group as well.
Yeah, that's interesting. I could see some pushback on that.
Absolutely.
Like, well, we're going to put homeless people in the jail, but at the same time, I think, a co-solution, something that would go hand in hand, would be great for the community.
Right. There's two footprints that need to happen, and one is the jail footprint, and the other one is a homelessness center footprint. And maybe those ideas should be married up in some way, for public benefit.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's interesting. You talk about going community to community and getting buy-in. You know, we've had the alternatives group running now for a while, and should their work continue, it seems like we'd get a better sense of what sort of jail we actually need and have some data on that.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I agree with a lot of the council people that I don't think that the size of the jail, the number of beds, I don't think that was really the big issue. Is it 350? Is it 355? Is it 360? I mean, those are not the big issue. The big issue, I think, was that, you know, 60% of the people in jail are in there because they can't afford bail. They can't get out on bail. A third of the people in there have some kind of mental health problem that is actually exacerbated and worsened from being in there. And I think that if you start tackling those particular issues, then you're going to have a much better sense of your justice center and your justice outcomes.
Yeah, I think so too. And it will take more than just law enforcement, because their hands are tied to a degree. I mean, law says they have to take these people into custody.
Correct.
And keep them in custody if they can't meet those those parameters. But at the same time, I think we need to, we need overall reform of our justice system to make sure that those people have an opportunity, that it's not a debtor's prison,
right,
and that it treats people fairly and gives people the opportunity to, not be incarcerated with people who do belong there, and that they have a chance to make good on, whatever their debt to society is, and move on with their lives and remain productive members of our community.
Right. It took us 40 years to get into this mess. It might take us 10 years to get out of this mess.
That's true. Although I have to make an admission here. There was a part of me that just thought, let it pass so this issue goes away. But our community is committed to this and finding the right solution, which I think is a good thing.
Yeah, and I think you said something there, Joe, that I think is important, which is I think one of the reasons why elected officials wanted this to pass was because the solutions and the responses are expensive, and this tax would have given them some capacity to address these issues, and they're denied those because of the failure of the jail initiative.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that makes sense.
Well, let's talk about those elected officials a little bit here. Also got some updates on the county council races, and not a whole lot of movement. The closest race, Barry Buchanan and Mary Kay Robinson. Barry has gained a little bit. He's now at just over 52% of the votes. That was much closer than I expected it to be.
Actually, I was very, very, very worried about that particular race for a variety of reasons. But the main reason I was worried about it was apparently low turnout. And on the one hand, and then on the other hand, Mary Kay Robinson received about $165,000 in contribution and independent expenditure, which was about eight times what Barry Buchanan, the incumbent, received. The reason I was worried about that is that if Barry had lost, then I think the council would have lost control of its ability to replace, and we'll talk about this too, but replace Todd Donovan in his position.
Let's talk about that now. What would the scenario there be?
Well, the scenario would be that Todd Donovan was shifting into a position on District 2. That would have left a seat open that needed to be replaced by the incoming council in 2018. That would have been a 3-3 split if Mary Kay Robinson had been on that. Had been elected, and that would have fallen then to the county executive to place that. And that would have been a replay of a situation that happened in Whatcom County in about 2009. In 2009, Pete Kremen replaced on county council, and it created this immediate rightward shift. And had that happened with this particular council, there would have been a lot of things that happened that they're involved in right now that just would have ended immediately. The whole idea of unrefined fossil fuel exports, that would have ended. Discussion about creating a special taxing district for Lake Whatcom, that would have ended. The moratorium related to rural wells, mm-hmm. Hearst decision, that would have ended. So just that one particular race would have stopped a lot of current council action from moving forward, for good or ill. We can talk about for good or ill, but
yeah,
it would have just stopped those.
Yeah,
things.
I'm heartened to see Barry pull ahead in that race, and I wasn't surprised either that at its closest. I was a little worried. I think Barry was. He was kind of a little bit in panic mode on social media and stuff, and especially in those later days with that big influx of money into Mary Kay's campaign.
Right,
and I heard from her at the candidate forums is this strong conservative woman who she was going to carry that water, and that was concerning, and especially like you say, Tim, with the machinations of what's happening with the new five district formulation and Todd's shift into this other district, I think. That was concerning.
Yeah, she's an extremely articulate, professional, well-spoken, attractive candidate in many, many ways, and she was formidable on that perspective. One of the things I do typically right before an election is I go through the public disclosure to see what the support is. And I always do, there's two kinds of support that happen. There are the major donors that come in and give $1,000 or $500 to a candidate. And then there are all the little donations. Mm-hmm. And the little donations are an indicator of grassroots support. Like, I like that. I don't have a lot of money, but I like that person. I'm going to give them money. And usually you can tell the energy, the underlying energy of a campaign by those small contributions. I didn't see it in this one. So I was mm-hmm. thinking that it was going to be a very, very close race.
Uh-huh. Absolutely.
Well, that not yet resolved, but looks very good for Barry. And
it's going in the right direction, that's for sure.
District 3 was not great for Rebecca Boonstra. The new update, not a whole lot of shift there. It tightened a tiny amount. Any surprises there?
Well, Dave, you and I talked about, we both were very excited to see what happened with this particular race because it's a complete unknown. It's mm-hmm. a gigantic question mark as to whether District 3 is a conservative district, a liberal district, how it was going to go one way or the other. And I think it's in a very exciting, still a very exciting swing district. You know, Tyler Byrd was an extremely, I think, an attractive candidate. He eschewed a lot of the, you know, hardcore rhetoric, and he tried to be a reasonable and rational person. But I think his presence on the council does represent a rightward shift on county council that I think is going to increase in future years. I think he's maybe the first person that's going to show up on county council that is going to start moving him to the right.
Yeah, he's young and enthusiastic. As you say, he's attractive. He's got the model family and speaks articulately, I would say, about issues in the county and not in a way that I always would agree with him, but he's got ideas, and I don't know, He's got a lower voice, but I liken him to kind of Vincent Byes
a bit. Exactly.
That's a good comparison.
That's a good comparison.
You know, I hadn't thought about that, but they're both younger guys who are really genuinely interested mm-hmm. in the issues facing their communities.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that really comes through very strongly with them.
Well, what do you think about District 3, Dave? Because you and I both have talked enthusiastically and interestingly about with great interest about that particular district.
You know, I'm a little bit disappointed because this outcome kind of fit the conventional narrative going into it. I think that this is a stranger district than these results so far attest to. I'm really looking forward to, once the election's certified and we get the abstracts that break it down by precinct, just sitting down and going through, 2012 through now and see how that shook out, because a district that includes the southwest corner of Whatcom County, which is blue, and sweeps up, includes Kendall and Maple Falls, and it's a wild place, and I think it's an interesting one.
Yeah, I think it's a great it's my favorite district in a lot of ways because, I used to live out in Sumas area, and I can tell you that there are these little pockets of liberals that live out there and then they're surrounded by farm country with a little bit more conservative outlook. But it's a very dynamic district, even in the foothills. And then when you start adding south Bellingham, then it becomes extremely dynamic.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yeah. A lot of variation there. I mean, a lot of land to cover as well.
Absolutely.
The other big headline one, the one that absorbed a lot of the attention of everyone on my Facebook feed was, of course, County Council District 2 between Todd Donovan and Amy Glasser. And that tightened slightly, but by tightening, Todd Donovan is now at 65.79%. Any surprise there? Did you see?
No, not particularly. Although, through as this thing, I was extremely disappointed with District 2, the race itself. I have to say, here you got two liberals going head to head, and I don't understand why they could not raise the bar of their discussion into liberal on liberal kinds of issues. Mm-hmm. I'll give you an example of a couple of them. Let's talk about Galbraith Mountain. You know, there's a lot of liberals that would like to see the council do something about Galbraith Mountain. Let's talk about the pace of development or of recovery of Lake Whatcom. That's set on a 50-year horizon. Well, why not? Let's talk about making it 25 years. Let's talk about, like, recovering our lake faster than on a faster schedule. Another issue that didn't get talked about at all is conservation futures. This is something that voters voted on. They want these things. They wanted conservation futures to be collected. It's a tax acquire open space in Whatcom County. My understanding about that is that they don't even spend it at this point. They just don't spend it. Let's talk about how you might spend conservation futures. These are things I think that the left could have had a discussion about, but we never got beyond this kind of tit for tat, back and forth. It was extremely disappointing. I'll criticize Todd Donovan for not being particularly magnanimous. I think that was foolish on his part, because I don't think it gained him a single vote, but it lost him hundreds of votes. And you got to be smart about these things when you're running for office.
Yeah, I saw a lot of that too on Facebook, social media, and Todd was very vocal. And you're right. It wasn't a discussion about the issues. It was complaining about campaign tactics and liberals calling each other spendthrift liberals. And
yes.
It just really devolved there. And I think you're right. It nobody really won votes through all that. And I saw a lot of people saying, this is enough to drive me away from your candidacy, where, I should be in your back pocket.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think they just got caught up, and especially Todd. I'm a little bit surprised because of his experience. And his
general brilliance on politics.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy teaches politics at Western Washington
exactly.
University. He's like, come on,
and,
Todd.
And in a way, I mean, there was in the primary, there was the tiff about the mailer that Todd sent out that didn't even mention Amy. It mentioned his Republican opponent. And then, charges of dirty politics and this and that. Well, it's politics. It's rough and tumble, and it's a matter of tactics. That I didn't really have an issue with so much, but when it got into the Amy's saying this about me and then Todd's saying this about me, and mm-hmm. it just devolved into something that I think tarnished both candidates.
It did. And I criticize Todd. I'll criticize Amy here. I mean, I'm on the air. I don't think she ever moved beyond this sort of calculation that she was putting out there as, it's like, if you vote for me, then Todd stays in his position. And I sort of started to see that as almost like a Mary Poppins kind of thing. It's like just a spoonful of sugar, and I'm going to feed you a spoonful of sugar, Todd, and the medicine will be that we'll have a more liberal council in the future. I just think that there are things that liberals can talk about that I really wish they would have talked about. I think it's a great disappointment. The concern I have in future races is if this district only paradigm stays in place, one thing that we know is going to happen in the future, I think, is that in the liberal districts, those are going to draw primaries because liberals like to fight.
Yeah.
And in the conservative districts, those aren't going to draw primaries because there's a kind of a top-down kind of structure in conservative thought where they decide outside of the public arena who's going to be anointed to run in a particular race. So those aren't going to have primaries, I don't think. And so I hope liberals kind of get their act together and learn how to campaign as liberals and talk and like move the dialogue. Mm-hmm. I mean, honestly, I hope they move it really far to the left. That's what should happen.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and just to pile on, I guess, the League of Women Voters Forum, which was really excellent this year. They ran some very excellent debates, and you may have heard them here on KMRE. There was the one where, you know, it was Mary Kay Robinson and Barry Buchanan, and they were asked the question, what is the role of government in people's lives, in your view? And neither of them answered it in the way that I wanted them to, which is some stirring Sorkin speech about, you know, it's us coming together and this and that. And I was really disappointed. And then the Glasser Donovan race started in, and Todd Donovan, both of these people are people that I could sit down and agree with 99% of things.
Mm-hmm.
And Todd Donovan spent his closing statement rebutting that, you know, Amy Glasser, oh, well, we'll both be on the council thing. And I was just so disappointed that, well, I wasn't on this show for a couple of weeks. It wasn't directly related, but there you have it. You are listening to Cascadia News Now here on KMRE 102.3 FM and KAVZ 102 FM, Deming Van Zandt. I am Dave Willingham, joined by co-host Tim Johnson. Our very, very special guest, Joe Tehan, who is returning to, you know, right-thinking radio.
That's right.
Stephanie Contreras is off this week. We didn't really talk about it. Council District 1, Rudd Brown won by like 80%. Does anyone have anything they want to add to that?
Only that... That one interested me in the sense that this would be another one of those races that probably should have drawn a primary.
Mm.
I don't know why it didn't draw a primary. District 2 drew a primary. You know, two liberals going head to head. Rudd's not exactly a liberal.
No,
not at all.
Well, he even I talked to him last night, right after the initial results came out, and he made that point. He said, "Well, it's pretty apparent that I, you know, in addition to the progressive vote, that I got a good chunk of the conservative vote." And he says I made a point to work across the aisle, and I think he has to a good degree. Phil Morgan, I've known Phil forever, clean Phil, and I think he's a really wonderful man and just a darling guy, but not someone who I would want to have in government. I think his
did he campaign at all?
I don't think so. I saw some signs up, and I saw him at at the Canada forums. But I don't think he was really out there a whole lot, doorbelling, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I'm going to make a prediction.
Okay,
you heard it here, folks. I think Red's probably going to run for county executive in the future.
That could be.
Ooh. That'll be fun. Hey, Rudd, come and talk to us about that. Well, I want to take a diversion now to talk about another election that happened on November 4th, and that's the Lummi Indian Business Council elected their commissioners for their three-year terms, and Cheryl Sanders, Selena Fair, and Jay Julius were all reelected, and new... to the council is Freddie Lane, and I want to say congratulations to everybody. I love Freddie Lane. He's just such a wonderful guy, and we look forward to talking more about that and with them soon. We're going to take a quick break, and we will be right back in just a minute. You're listening to Cascadia News Now on KMRE and KAVZ.
Create. Share. Education. We enliven the rich history, legacies, stories, and historical traditions of the Salish people. We endeavor to create understanding and change perceptions across cultural differences, share history, and educate others. We are dedicated to marketing Native American-themed performance arts, as well as making the culture and the history of Native American people accessible. Drawing upon long family traditions, the children of the Setting Sun Productions, multimedia film and theater arts, specializing in Coast Salish storytelling. You will find us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube, or settingsunproductions.org. Heishka.
Welcome back to Cascadia News Now here on 102.3 FM KMRE Bellingham and 102.5 FM Deming and Van Zandt. Once again, I'm Dave Willingham, joined by co-host Tim Johnson of the Cascadia Weekly and very, very special guest Joe Tehan. Thank you again for being here, Joe.
Thanks for inviting me. Absolutely.
So let's take just a quick minute and talk about City of Bellingham races. Not a change happening here?
Yeah, you know, again, this is another one of these things that upsets me. I really wish the City of Bellingham races were more dynamic. I wish there were some people running against a lot of these positions. A lot of these positions are just, I mean, I love Gene Knutson, right? But I would love to see somebody run against Gene.
Mm-hmm.
The trouble is, I think if anybody ever ran against Gene, I think Gene would step down. Because, I mean, Gene's been at this for like 24 years, you know? And I like Gene, and this is not a commentary against Gene, but I wish these Bellingham races were just a little more dynamic. In Michael Lilliquist's case, Quenby Peterson stepped up, but then really decided that she wasn't going to campaign. And so that was just sort of another walk-on for Michael. And I like Michael, and I think Michael's a great council person, but I just wish there was more dynamism going on in Bellingham City Council races.
Yeah, I think you're right. It would just liven things up. It would make everybody, I think, more aware of what the issues are that are facing the city. And and like you said earlier in the show, Tim, it's just not good democracy when you've got all these positions that are and people who are running unopposed. And we had that weird dynamic. I'm, you know, really glad that the Bostrom guy got smushed like a bug. I think most of us are. But, and that added some drama and intrigue to the race. But it didn't really, I think, because of his persona, and it didn't really add to the conversation. And I think if we did have more people stepping up and actually campaigning, like you say, because I think a lot of people didn't even know that Quimby was running, you know, until they got their ballot. And they're like,
yeah.
Oh, here's another name on the ballot that I didn't expect. And I just think that it, win or lose, I think just the other candidates getting into the fray, I think adds to the dynamic and to the, you know, just the ability for us as citizens to really to learn more about what's important to our community.
Yeah, I think democracy is, I mean, it's more robust, it's more dynamic when you've got greater participation. When you don't have people running, you have fewer people bothering to fill out their ballot, and so you have fewer people involved in the election of people. I think it's not a good outcome for a society that prides itself on its democracy. The interesting thing I thought, I mean, you know, I look at these numbers. The thing that I thought was interesting was in Michael Lilliquist's case, Quenby Peterson didn't campaign. Still got, I don't know, 25-30%. I haven't seen the numbers tonight, but I think she got like 25-30%, which is what you'd expect.
Because
there's always about 30% of the people is like, move them all out, get them all. You know, there's always that
30%. Yeah, yeah.
But what's interesting about Roxanne Murphy is that Eric Bostrom, you mentioned him, he didn't even get that. I mean, he was out campaigning, and he was supported by the Republican Party, and he had people writing letters for him. He didn't even get Quenby's numbers, and Quenby actually wasn't even campaigning. So I think that what I draw from that is I think that speaks very highly of Bellingham, that Bellingham did not want essentially, can I say it? I mean, a hater. They didn't want a hater on Bellingham City Council. They didn't want somebody who expresses the things that Eric does on the streets, corners. They didn't want that in their government. And I think even if you were Republican, you didn't want that because, I mean,
right.
He got 20%, which the interesting thing was my prediction during the August primary, my prediction was that he probably wasn't going to get many more votes than he got in August, and that actually turned out to be true. So
right.
I feel good about Bellingham. I mean, hooray Bellingham, I think.
You got to think, like Rudd Brown, I think that Roxanne got a segment of the conservative electorate that just couldn't cotton to the guy.
Absolutely.
And knew about him and saw his antics on the campaign trail.
And didn't think that would be good government
right.
on a council.
Mm-hmm. Because, look at what we're seeing from the White House and that kind of rhetoric and that kind of divisiveness. And he represents the same thing. I mean, I tried to interacted. Maybe I wasn't the most polite. I just at one point on his webpage, I just asked him where his hate signs were. And then all he responded to me was with a GIF, you know, like that said, prove it. And I'm like, huh? And he kept sending that when I try to respond, and people would attack me for you know, lying about him and his character and that sort of thing. And he kept putting that GIF up, and I'm like, this guy's nuts.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about something that can bring us all together, and that is the Port District. We had one and two up this year, and tonight's results put Michael Shepard up a little bit over Dan Robbins, 50.83% to 49.17%. Port Commissioner number two race tightened up a little bit, but still with Ken Bell in the lead.
Yeah, when the results came in last night, you know, you sort of learn how to read these things. I went down to it very quickly, and I thought that Shepard Robbins race is dynamic and could flip. That was the only one that I saw that actually I think could move, mm-hmm. just based on the number of ballots that are outstanding. So I was not surprised to see Michael Shepard climb into the lead on that. There were a lot of late ballots that were put out, a lot of them from Bellingham, and I think all of those ballots are going to move both in the direction both of Michael Shepard and Barry Wenger. But I just think that there was only about 200 votes difference between Robbins and Shepard, and I think that one I think may continue to strengthen in late returns.
Yeah. Ken Bell, I've gotten to know fairly well, and I've got a lot of respect for him. I think his experience is solid, and I can understand why he's an attractive candidate to a lot of people. And Barry, on the you know, I'm seeing him at the candidate forum because I wasn't terribly familiar with him before. And I mean, I liked his ideas. I think Ken kind of exudes this energy and you know, a commitment to the port as a economic entity in essence. Right. And it's interesting. And I think you're right about the other race as well. I think that's. Was likely to move in the direction that it is starting to go now.
Yeah, and I'll just say, you know, I've known Barry many years. I love the guy. I think he would have been fabulous on the Port of Bellingham. There is nobody that knows the conditions of Whatcom waterways more than Barry Wenger does. He would have been fabulous on there. The interesting thing, and I commented on this in a column recently, but Bellingham's waterfront is in the hands of county-wide politics. You know, Ken is a conservative guy. I've said this before that as far as the Port of Bellingham, I mean, I'm a liberal, but I don't necessarily think that a liberal conservative, I don't think that's the proper way to look at the Port of Bellingham. Mm-hmm. They're interested in economic development. I think, you know, conservatives, business people, they know how to do that. I think Ken will be great on the Port of Bellingham Commission overall. The concern that I have is there's a very near-term decision that needs to be made about the Bellingham waterfront that I think a guy like Barry Wenger, who worked for the Department of Ecology, who knows the conditions of both Whatcom Waterway and the Bay, I think he might have been... He's just a more technical knowledge on that particular thing. But in terms of the overall mission of the port, I think Ken Bell will be fine.
Yeah, that's my sense as well, that it's not a political entity per se. And the mission is to economic development in harmony with so many other factors as we look at the redevelopment of the waterfront. There's so much that can go in there and be part of that and make it so much more dynamic. And we are starting to see some progress. That's good to see. And I'm comfortable with Ken Bell if he does go on to win this race.
What do you think, Dave?
You know, I've been deeply critical of the port's decision to buy that garbage teardown on the waterfront to keep the city from having it to build a homeless shelter and spend $750,000 on that. So, you know, I am, you know, happy that the makeup of the port is shifting a little bit. I'm really what makes me the happiest in this is that this is a race that both of these are races that everybody in Whatcom gets to vote on.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of Whatcom did, you know, just in the initial returns. The fall off for the port races was like 3,000, which isn't great, but there's still 40 some thousand people voting in these races. And it's I've kind of felt like the port side of things has been neglected in this county, and we're not paying as much attention there as we should be. But it kind of feels like people are waking up and paying attention to it. So I am cautiously happy and looking forward to see what happens. I really am going to be bummed if I lose my twisty park in the Bellingham waterfront, though. You know, I saw it in one plan years ago, and I feel like that was a solemn promise. So, you know, we've talked about the local stuff. Let's talk about the big thing. Down in Washington's 45th district, Monka Dhingra has increased her lead in the count that was made earlier today, and the race has been called by the AP and a couple of folks in her favor, which means, as of right now, well, as of certification of the election in a month, the Democratic Party is going to have a restored majority in the state Senate in Washington State, which could be kind of a big deal for a lot of things that we've been talking about.
Yeah, they're going to have it for 9 months. And and I guess my advice to them would be, like, make sure that you thread your needle and you get the things that you need to get done with this, because you can't guarantee that this is going to stay.
Mm-hmm. This district has gone
right.
Republican consistently.
That's right. Mm-hmm. So just take your opportunity. We've talked about this on the show before, Dave, but the capital budget, I would assume that this new Democratic majority is going to pass that capital budget. It's going to be interesting, because I think when that capital budget gets passed, people are going to be put to work. Mm-hmm. They're going to be building roads, and I think it's going to be good for the economy. And I hope that the Democrats are in a position where they can claim that victory. I mean, the fact that there are a lot of people working is a result of them passing that budget. And I hope that they take that message out to voters in 2018, because the other message that's going to come is that because the capital budget got passed, the Hearst decision, we've talked about that on rural wells, that's going to continue to percolate, and it's going to energize the right. So I hope that I know what the right wing is going to do in 2018. They're going to pound on that. I hope the Democrats take their opportunity to say, you know what, we put a lot of people to work this year.
Yeah, I have to say that I've been luxuriating in the vision of Doug Erickson sitting in boxer shorts and a soiled T-shirt, swigging Jack Daniels. He's unshaven and he's just whimpering to himself.
Yeah, I think as a result of this, I think he's lost his chairmanship of the Environmental Committee, which, you know, I'm not going to cry too hard that he's not the chair of the Environmental Committee.
That's for sure.
Anymore.
Well, let's take a step to look back at the year we just had in the state legislature. You talked about the capital budget, which passed the state house 90 votes to a rounding error.
Yeah.
And was held up in the Senate because the Republicans didn't want to move it. We had the long, long brinksmanship over the state budget where the Republicans would not negotiate on the budget until it was a crisis. Mm-hmm. And we wound up with a budget that dramatically changed the way we fund education in this state, and may not meet the requirements. We're going to be talking about that more soon, set up by the state Supreme Court, and contained some basic errors in it that could have been caught in a longer process, like King County lost $18 million in mental health funding because of a math error. And that's what happens when you have these long brinkmanship things.
And then throw something together at the last moment.
Right. Yeah, and we've seen the state has successfully done bipartisan things that are fantastic, like the family leave bill that they passed this year. There are a number of great things that the legislature was able to do, but some really big ones that they weren't. And I'm optimistic that maybe things will work a little bit better, but I'm also seeing on the federal level, the Republican Party in Congress has kind of turned into the dog that caught the car, and they haven't been able to, even with total control, get their big banner things
correct.
Through.
Correct. And you have to understand, and you know, Senator Kevin Ranker explained this to me one time, and I thought it was great. When there's like giant majorities in Olympia, it's really hard to build a coalition because everybody wants to do their own thing.
Mm-hmm.
When you have a very narrow group and they know that every vote counts, there's a lot of discipline, but they're going to need that discipline because there are a lot of things that they want to do. If I were in Democratic leadership in Olympia, if I were running the caucus there, I would be like, let's do the things that we all agree on. Let's do those things. Let's get those things done because I don't think they have the discipline or the time to get everything done. I think there are things that there is broad consensus. Like you said, Dave, I mean, there's been a lot of – one of the things that's been frustrating about Washington State is there's been a lot of things that have got a lot of agreement, and they've just been in a coma for a long time while there's this hostage taking and there's this brinksmanship and there are this bargaining. A lot of it happened around education. And I think that if they can just wake those things that have been in a coma up and push those over the finish line, I think it'll be a good year in Olympia. If they try to take on too much, I think they're going to fall short. And so they need discipline, huge discipline.
Yeah, I'd like to see you look what's happening in Washington, D.C., and it's, you know, it's Republicans just trying to ram their agenda through, regardless of you know, anybody's concerns. And what we've seen in Olympia is, at least on some big issues, Hearst decision comes to mind.
Yes.
The Republicans in the Senate grandstanding on that. And, you know, it seems to me likely unconstitutionally trying to just pass legislation that just ignores the court's ruling on the whole thing. And I don't know how that would fly because, you know, that's going to bring in a lawsuit. It's going to go to the Supreme Court and they're going to come back with the same ruling. But, you know, I'd like to see the Democratic majority realize, okay, we don't have a huge majority. Let's see if we can come up, because I think they could come up with a compromise, a bipartisan compromise to deal with the Hearst decision and some of these other big issues. Yeah, I think as far as the cap budget, let's just move it. Yeah, that's an important one to get through. And, you know, so now we don't have to deal with that obstructionism. But on some of these more sensitive issues that can really be used as bludgeons in a campaign, let's work together to try and get a coalition and come up with a real solution that works for most people, if not everyone.
Yeah. You know, I guess the other comment I would make on this is, you know, it's just, I mean, it's revolting and it's stomach churning to realize that $10 million was spent on this one race. And like, how many children could be fed on $10 million? How many homeless people could be housed on $10 million? And it's one vote, it's one seat in the Senate. And, you know, the idea, I don't know how our society can get control of that particular thing, but the idea that so much money is being spent on political campaigns, it's just being burned up, just burning up money. And for what? For a single vote, in the Senate.
And yeah, that much money, and they're still counting ballots, who knows what the total count is going to be, but it's probably going to be less than 50,000 total votes cast on either side here.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Well, it goes to the county council race with over $100,000 to
correct.
Just here in Whatcom County from one candidate.
Right, and then you divide that into the number of votes that actually were received, and it's like I don't, what is it? I mean, it's like, you know, $100, $200 a vote. It's
Yeah.
I don't know what I don't. It really seems to me that the one thing that our democracy needs to get control of really quickly, or we won't have one, is this idea of independent expenditures in campaigns. The Supreme Court has said that money equals speech, but I think that money actually also is a chilling factor against speech. I think money can stop speech. I don't think money is speech.
Mm-hmm. It amplifies speech, is what I see it. It's just a big Marshall amp, you know. My voice is louder than yours because I've got all this cash and I can spread it around and get my opinion out there.
Right, but you know, circling back to the race between Barry Buchanan and Mary Kay Robinson. I mean, she got 8 times. The independent expenditure he did, he still won.
Mm-hmm.
Was the money that was spent on behalf of her well spent when, you know, it's a 50-50 proposition?
Yeah, that's a good point. Because it doesn't always work. And we just assume that the more money that's poured into a campaign, the better that campaign is going to do and the more dominant it's going to be. But it's not always the case. I mean, you look at the haphazard campaign Donald Trump ran. What the hell happened?
Yeah, you remember when everybody was laughing that they didn't have yard signs?
Yeah, yeah.
We were all so young then.
We thought it was springtime in America.
Yeah. So, you know, last night, late on Twitter, I was already seeing a lot of folks that were wishlisting for Washington State. They were, you know, people talking about, we're going to get our carbon tax, we're going to get our, you know, income tax, constitutional amendment, this and that. I'm going to ask, starting with you, Joe, what's your wish list for Washington State under unified government?
A wish list. Well, I think, for one thing, I think, as I said, I think we need to just, let's pass this capital budget. I see us as being able to move forward at least temporarily, as Tim's pointed out, on some important revenue issues and taking a look again at school funding and making sure that we're complying with that court decision, not just to comply with the decision, but to be right by our kids and to really invest in public education and make Washington a model in that respect. And when we've got these, you know, now national movements toward privatization and that sort of thing, and also work to solve some of these problems, like Hearst, and in a more bipartisan way that people can feel like, okay, they really are working for us. They're not just trying to, you know, they're not just kowtowing to the environmentalists, or they're not just kowtowing to the developers. They're working to come up with a solution that works for everybody who has an interest, or the best it can for everybody who has an interest, because obviously there's no solution is going to work perfectly for everybody. But just on some of those bigger items, I think I'd like to see more bipartisanship and cooperation.
Yeah, my answer is going to probably disappoint a little bit. I don't think that they're going to be able to move on the really big, complicated things. But the other thing is, there's a lot of really bad bills out there. There's not just good bills that need to be pushed over the finish line, but there's a lot of bad bills. There's a bathroom bill. There's all this kind of stuff. And so what I would hope that this slim majority in the Senate would be able to do is kill a lot of that stuff, just kill it, get rid of it, et cetera, clean the slate on a lot of really bad legislation that has come about through this this hostage-taking situation that's happened in Olympia. So I don't know that they're going to be able to make great things happen in a short order, but they may be able to stop really bad stuff from happening in a short order.
Well, thank you very much, both of you. Tim Johnson of the Cascadia Weekly, Joe Tien, formerly of the very, very missed Joe Show.
Oh, well, yes. Thanks very much. I
great to have
that.
You on the show.
I have been Dave Willingham. Stephanie Contreras has been out. She is our producer here at Cascadia News Now. Our fabulous engineer is Devlin Sweeney. We will be back soon. This has been Cascadia News Now on KMRE 102.3 FM Bellingham and KAVZ 102.5 in Deming, Van Zandt.